Brenton Tarrant, the terrorist who shot up a New Zealand mosque, posted this 74-page manifesto. Now, the manifesto is dangerous, but we are sharing some of his thoughts here so that viewers can have an insight into what fuels hate.
Hey, this is YD from the Hail Evangelist Show, and you're listening to the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network.
Hey, did I tell you guys I got a goat?
And we asked our political leaders to address the growing menace of Islamophobia and hate that has been perpetrated by political leaders, by ideologues, by people who want to run for public office, by people who won public office on the backs of immigrants, blacks, Jews, Muslims, and all minorities. We hold them accountable.
Which gives the proprietor power over users. Mm-hmm. It's a tool to subjugate people with. That's the injustice that we are trying to put an end to.
Little column A, little column B.
Yeah, baby!
Well, good morning, good evening, or good afternoon, wherever you are, whatever you do. A lot of things happening in the world today. Most of them are far beyond our control, you might say. So perhaps it's time we took a pause and thought about life and thought about the laws of gravity, odious ideas, free speech, Rudyard Kipling, manifestos, media, politics, and or the news. Don't touch that dial. Just try to hear me out for a while. Ideas, Stalin once said, are dangerous. If there's anything that history has taught us, it's that ideas are diverse and they are change-inspiring. Sometimes that's good, sometimes it's bad. Usually it's bad for people in power, which is why those who have power, or at least want to have power over you, often tell you that odious ideas should be suppressed. What else is new, am I right? Here's how you get a hold of me. The text machine is area code 209-565-DAVE. It's 209-565-3283. The email is dave@thedavebowmanshow.com. And, of course, whatever web search browser you use will take you to thedavebowmanshow.com, where you can get the show on demand right now, hopefully live soon. I'm still working on getting all that set up. And, of course, today, I'm not live anyway because crap keeps happening. And there you go. Ego bibere capula sed olive viverve. I drink coffee that others might live, especially on days like this. I don't know. I tried to be live today. I really did. I know it's Monday and all, but that was my plan. And then stuff just keeps, you know, happening. And so apparently we forgot a dental appointment for my son. So, anyway, there you have it. It's the way it goes sometimes, I guess. You know, Stalin, we talked about this the other day on the anniversary of his death. Stalin once said, ideas are more powerful than guns. We would not let our enemies have guns. Why should we let them have ideas? And there's a lot of conversational buffalo meat on that little thing there, on that little saying, because we value free speech. I said this the other day. Of all the rights that Americans have, I know you're always going to get an argument, a debate, a discussion about which one is most precious, but far and away, I think freedom of speech, because it encompasses all the others, is really the driving force behind what it really means to be an American. We have freedom of speech. Unlike many other places in the world, we can speak our mind. George Washington once was asked why he allowed newspapers to present articles that were, to print articles that were critical of him and his administration. And he said, because we have freedom of speech here. Take these newspapers with you back to Europe. And when you get there, make sure you tell them where you got these newspapers, because this is how passionately we believe in this idea that no one should be suppressed in their thought processes, in their speech processes, and in their worship. Yes, there are responsibilities, and we all get that. But the idea that we can just tell people what to think, what not to think, how to think, is somewhat, it's an anathema to us as Americans. We don't like that. We say we don't like it, but then somebody says something we don't like, and we're off and running in the direction of, Well, how can I make that person shut up? How can I make that person be quiet? How can I make that person not say nothing? How can I do that? History has a long record of people trying to suppress what other people might be thinking, let alone saying. You can go back as far as you want in history and you'll find this to be true. I don't really care how far back you go. You can go back to the Catholic Church, the Roman Catholic Church during the Dark Ages, and locking up people for daring to say that the earth went around the sun. How dare they think this? And of course, that was all about power. That was all about who decides what you think. Because if you start thinking for yourself, then you won't listen to the church as to what the church tells you to think. This is not criticism of the Roman Catholic Church, folks. This is history. You can look it up yourselves. You don't need me to repeat this for you, except to say, as a way of an example, that freedom of thought, freedom of expression, freedom of speech have been attacked through the years. This is the way it goes. Why do we have a United States of America to begin with? Because part of the problem was that England, the king, parliament, so forth and so on, one of the things that they did, and if you go back and read the Declaration of Independence, you'll see this in there, is they began to suppress our freedom of speech as colonials. They began to tell us that we couldn't say things that they didn't like us saying. There were trials, and of course, this was in England, too. In England, they tried to suppress speech. They tried to, John Wilkes, they tried to suppress him. And as part of our history as Englishmen, as a part of who we were as Englishmen and as colonials, freedom of speech was very precious to us. And so when we started to be told, we can't say this, you can't say that, you can't do this, you can't do that, well, that rubbed us wrong. And so there was that element of it. You don't have to go too far back in history to find fascism. One of the best people I follow on social media is a guy by the name of Mark Olivares, and he is a geologist out of the Bay Area in San Francisco. He's not in San Francisco, but he's in the Bay Area. But he runs a page called World War II History 85 Years Ago Today. And he is taking you day by day through the lead up into World War II and the actual events of World War II. And it's fascinating because we're, you know, obviously in 1933 right now, shortly after Adolf Hitler is named chancellor. And you see the moves that the fascist government, that the Nazi government was making to suppress ideas that it did not like, that challenged the thinking of Nazi ideology. The communists did the same thing. Joseph Stalin, why would we let you have ideas? And even today, that continues to some degree. China, communist China, what we call red China, has the social media score where they watch each citizen. And if your social media score, if you're thinking the right way, what's the phrase from Star Trek? Right thinking can be rewarded as quickly as wrong thinking can be punished. Well, you get a certain score, and that score allows you to do things within the country, travel, meet with people. And I have a very good friend of mine that's in China right now, and it's kind of intriguing to see, how he and those talking to him sort of maneuver around that, because, you know, we're used to being able to say whatever we think, and the people he's dealing with aren't. So it becomes kind of an interesting idea. In our modern era, of course, the communist China, it's communistic, but it's an interesting idea. And we're starting to see more and more of this here, even in America, where we're being told what we can and can't think. Amazon last week, Amazon and a few others started banning videos. YouTube, I believe, started banning videos. Don't quote me on the YouTube one, but Amazon, I know for sure. Started banning videos that had to deal with anti-vaccination ideas. Now, look, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, okay? Those of you who have been around for a long time know this. I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I'm not a flat earther. I certainly wasn't a birther by any chance in the imagination. I once upon a time, I had my own conspiracy theory about something, and I clung to it like a Tiberian bat. I really did. And then one day, I woke up and realized, wait, in order for this to be true, this would also have to be true. And since I know that is not true, my conspiracy theory goes out the window. I grew up, I guess, is what ended up happening. And in that growing up, I began to realize that conspiracy theories are less about the theory than they are about the attention that the person espousing them needs. Well, I wanted to be center stage, and the only way I could be center stage was by saying something that nobody else was saying. And it had to be, didn't matter if it was researched, it just mattered if I sounded cogent. And I know that I did, because I gave several presentations on it through the years. And people would always come up and pat you on the back and say, well, that's really interesting. This deserves more research. No, it didn't. What it deserved was one good question, and which is, if this is true, how come this is not also true? And I would have gone, and you go to, but this is the case. And so I got over that. I'm not, as I said, a conspiracy theorist in the traditional sense. I mean, I think we as Americans, we love conspiracy theories. We really do. But we never stop to think about them. That's part of the problem. But this idea of doing away with this, suppressing the conspiracy theorist and the ideas that they present, I'm very uncomfortable with this. I'm very uncomfortable with what Amazon has done, and possibly YouTube. I'm very uncomfortable with the idea of saying we're not going to talk about this idea because, well, it's an odious idea, right? It's an idea that we don't like, and so consequently, it doesn't deserve our protection. I came across this quote on, I believe it was Friday, from a guy by the name of Richard Stallman, who you may or may not know. Odious ideas are not entitled to hide from criticism behind the human shield of their believers' feelings, which is a mouthful. Stallman's one of those guys that never uses 10 words where 100 will do. But the phrase that caught my eyes here was the odious ideas. Odious meaning, of course, repugnant, repellent, repulsive, ideas that are disgusting, things that we just don't like. And if you happen to have one of these ideas, in his opinion, you are not entitled to not be criticized because of your feelings. You should be roundly criticized. And in fact, if you dig deeper into Mr. Stallman's ideas about things, you'll find that he's got some ideas about what that criticism should include, one of which is that you should be made to shut up. And if you're made to shut up, well, then we don't have to listen to your odious idea. That's kind of where that's headed. And I that makes me very uncomfortable as well. Over the weekend, we saw a tragic event in Christchurch, New Zealand. We saw an event that, let's face it, it's ripe for conspiracy theorists because there are so many unanswered questions. And because we can't wait for those answers, because we can't wait for details to come out, we immediately have to jump on whatever seems logical at the first, much like the Fitzgerald collision. Well, David had to be a terrorist attack because all that equipment, all those people. Nobody wanted to wait until we got details, until we got facts before we rushed to judgment. We didn't want to do that. I'm hesitant to even get into this because we don't have all the facts. We have some facts. We have some information. We have the 74-page quote-unquote manifesto, which the shooter posted on the internet, and you can actually still read. All for now, I managed to snag a copy of it before the website that I got it from went down. Well, that post was taken down. The question becomes, you know, this idea is odious. The ideas that he presents in this book are odious. They are repulsive. They are repellent. And if Mr. Stallman and others have their way, including apparently the news media, you will never know what those ideas are. You will have no clue what these ideas are. And so how will you ever, if you don't know what the ideas are, how can you actually make any kind of debate against them or with them? If I don't understand physics, how do I discuss the theory of relativity? How do I get into those things? If you don't understand theology, how do you have a reasonable discussion about theology? You can't do it. If you don't understand, you know, baseball, maybe you think Barry Bonds is the greatest ever. If these are basic ideas, but if you're denied the idea, if someone tells you you can't get the idea because it should be suppressed, because it should be hidden away in violation of free speech and free association and freedom of print, how do you ever rationally learn why it is that you don't agree with this? Like I said, I had my conspiracy theory once upon a time, and it was by reading other ideas, by researching other ideas, by researching other things that I came to the conclusion that my conspiracy theory wasn't just wrong. It was insultingly wrong. Not only was my theory wrong, but I was blaming people for something that happened that had nothing to do with it. How horrible. I mean, it was a good thing that I was a high school student and not, you know, somebody of any actual importance at that point. What if my ideas, because they were odious and because they were intriguing and tantalizing and titillating, what if somebody had run with them? Thank goodness they did not. But every now and then again, I hear the same theory posted and I see, you know, I follow enough World War II boards that I see it out there and I go, well, yeah, but what about this? If this is true, then what isn't true? This manifesto that this man put out is, it's intriguing from a linguistic standpoint. It really is. It's bizarrely written. It is pure plagiarism. It's not, there's nothing in here that's even a new idea for that matter. I mean, when you get right down to it, this guy's entire, well, I mean, he even stole the title from a French guy who wrote this book. This guy's name was Renaud. I keep adding an R. My French is terrible. Renaud Camus. And he wrote a book some years ago in 2012, which was actually an extension of another book from 1973 called Le Camp de Saint by Jean Raspail, which talks about the collapse of Western culture because of an overwhelming tidal wave of third world immigration. This fear is nothing new, folks. This fear of racial assimilation, racial conquest is nothing new. I mean, in the broad spectrum of things, this is why Pharaoh enslaved the Hebrews, because he was afraid that the Jews were too numerous. And so he had to, and you know, they were effectively invaders, which is weird because he was probably a Hyksos, which means he was an invader too. But at any rate, he enslaves the Hebrews because of this very idea. This idea is nothing new. Races throughout history have felt like, well, I'm going to be suppressed. I'm going to be taken over. I'm going to be subsumed into something else. Nobody ever really bothers to think about genetics and history and things like that. We just go, well, my race is better than your race. Your race isn't as good as my race, or there's something better or more equipped about mine that's more important. And so, you know, it just runs into that, and you run into people all the time that are more concerned with flaunting the benefits and the improvements of their particular ethnic genetics than they are about humanity. It's nothing new, folks. Like I said, the Hebrews, the Nazis, the communists, this idea pervades throughout history, even in Rome. Rudyard Kipling. You know who Rudyard Kipling was? Rudyard Kipling was a great author who wrote books that your kids, well, probably not your kids, but once upon a time we had to read in high school. He was an Englishman who lived during the First World War, and he hated the Germans. He hated them. Hated them. I don't think you're getting my facial expression here. He hated them. Why? I don't know. It's unlikely that we will ever know. I mean, sure, they were at war with them, but he wrote a poem in 1917 in which he becomes really the first person, he actually did before this poem, but he was one of the first people to actually refer to them as Huns, as a racial slur, if you will, which is weird because Englishmen are Caucasian, Germans are Caucasian, I mean, you know, but he hated them. And he wrote this poem in 1917 called The Beginnings. And if you were to read this poem, which, by the way, is referenced in the Great Replacement manifesto, you will find that Rudyard Kipling held the same theory. He held the same idea that the English race was going to be suppressed by people who were invading his country, people who were not supposed to be there, people who were of you know, third world extraction. And even in 1917, he hated this idea. And he wrote about how the Englishman would slowly anger, you know, like God, slow to anger. and somehow or another, but someday they would be pushed just too far and they would have to take action and they would destroy the invaders. And these ideas come to the surface once again in this manifesto that the shooter wrote. These are ideas that are as old as mankind himself, but now we're being told that we shouldn't read them. We shouldn't attempt to understand them. Now, I don't mean understand them in the sense of empathize with them, but understand them in the sense of how can you discuss something? How can you rationally debate something that you have no idea what is? If all you know is that this guy is a white supremacist and Australian, how do you defeat his ideas? How do you discuss his ideas? How do you, if all we do is take his odious ideas and throw them out the window, how do we ever have any reasonable conversation about how to teach Ben or your children how to recognize an odious idea and how to counter it? This is what concerns me as we're becoming more and more of that kind of society where we just bury our heads in the sand. We just tell ourselves, well, why are you afraid of the truth? This is one of those interesting cartoons. This is Dilbert cartoon from today. And it's one of the few cartoons where the boss, in his inimitably stupid way, actually hits the nail on the head. I was doing some research on the internet, he said, and I learned that there's a secret CIA base inside the sun, but no one's talking about it. And Dilbert's reply is, maybe you shouldn't do research on the internet. But that becomes our response to everything. What? Maybe you should just not read that. Maybe you shouldn't even think about that. And of course, the boss's reply is, why are you afraid of the truth? Which is kind of funny, but it also speaks to the idea that it's easier just to tell people don't read that stuff than it is to say, all right, now that you've read it, what do you think about it? Let's walk through this one thing at a time. One thing, one idea at a time, and see where we get. Richard Stallman is a guy who doesn't like some ideas. For those of you who don't know, he is the biggest proponent in the world of open license software. He believes that software companies are evil, that they should be unlicensed, that they should be done away with, and those sorts of things. But he also has some other beliefs. He wears a button that says impeach God. He doesn't like, he's an atheist. So if you're a religious person, he thinks that's an odious idea. He doesn't like mobile phones. He avoids using key cards to enter his office building because they track him. And one of the more interesting things I think about him is that he is openly child-free. He urges others not to have children, viewing as objectionable for reasons centered on family tensions and overpopulation. He argues that not having children better liberates people to find more productive ways to, quote, make a positive contribution to the world, unquote. So imagine if, imagine if Stephen Hawking's parents had felt that way. Imagine if Isaac Newton's parents had felt that way, or you know, Ronald Reagan's parents, or anybody that you hold in great regard had felt the way that Richard Stallman feels about those things. And he thinks those are odious ideas and that they should be suppressed. They should be done away with, those ideas. The problem, of course, with all of this is who decides what's odious? Who decides what ideas should be suppressed? Who decides this? Does a guy like Andrew Yang decide that? Who's Andrew Yang, I hear you cry? Andrew Yang is a candidate for the president of the United States. Did you know that? Apparently, this guy is a major candidate in the Democrat side for president of the United States. Does he get to decide what your odious ideas are? Andrew Yang, by the way, was quoted over the weekend as he believes that all white people are jealous and evil, They're jealous of Asian people, and that we are one generation away from all white people, all evil white people, just going out in the streets and shooting Asian people because we don't like the Chinese. Should he get to decide what ideas are odious? What about this guy, Donald Trump? Donald Trump once said nobody should be allowed to burn the American flag. If they do, there must be consequences. Perhaps loss of citizenship or ill in general. We've talked about this before. I didn't vote for Donald Trump, not because, you know, he's allegedly a misogynist or this, that, or the other. I didn't vote for Donald Trump because Donald Trump doesn't understand the First Amendment. He doesn't understand the ideas of free speech. And I have deep concerns about that. I still have deep concerns about that. I think all the other stuff is just, you know, I mean, you could say that stuff about anybody. But who decides? Richard Stallman, does he get to decide which of your ideas are odious? Yang, Trump, Hillary Clinton, the United Nations, the state of Colorado? Who gets to decide which of your ideas are odious and therefore should be suppressed, therefore should be mocked, therefore should be done away with? And if the answer is anybody except yourself, then we've got a problem. We've got a big problem. We have a huge problem. We have a willingness then to suppress freedom of speech and freedom of ideas and freedom of association. And those are things that deeply, deeply concern me. Moreover, what about ourselves? It's real easy to point the finger at other people. Go, well, that Andrew Yang guy, he's a nut, or Donald Trump is, you know, he's failing in his job to faithfully execute the laws of the United States and blah, 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 and all that stuff. And I get all that. I understand it. I, to a degree, agree with it. But what about ourselves? What about ourselves? Do we look at ourselves and say, am I suppressing ideas? Am I refusing to allow someone else to have an idea or share an idea because I don't like it, because I find it odious? And if I do, why do I do that? And am I afraid of the idea? Am I afraid of having to actually think about something? Look, I've said this before. I'm not anti-vaxxers. I think anti-vaxxers are wrong. I think the scientific evidence overwhelmingly shows that they're wrong. But I think if you silence them and just hit them upside the head with the 10-pound Bible of silence, of science, like we used to do with the 10-pound King James Version Bible, pow! You don't have any room for discussion, and nobody learns anything. Maybe that's something worth thinking about, right, Amazon? Maybe that's something we ought to go, hey, wait a minute. Why isn't somebody producing pro-vaccine, pro-anti-vaccination videos and books and putting them out there? They are. Why aren't people reading them? These ideas need to be discussed. They need to be thought through. These ideas that this shooter put out there need to be focused. They need to be seen for what they are, and you need to understand them, because otherwise, how do you counter them? I've heard people that I know very well share many of the same ideas. Why? Have they ever been challenged on those? Have they ever been asked to think about them? And if not, how do we get people to do that? By hiding those ideas or by talking about them? I got to get running. Take the time right now. Tell the people that matter in your life you love them very much. You'd miss them if they weren't there, so don't pass up those opportunities. You don't want to have that regret. Plausibly Live, I'm Dave Bowman. This is my show, The Dave Bowman Show, right here on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network from beautiful Silverdale, Washington. See you next time, everybody. I'm not sure when that'll be, either tomorrow or Wednesday, and then Thursday and Friday. See you later, everybody. Have a great day.
The Dave Bowman Show is a Slippery Fish Entertainment production for the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. For more information or to complain about how the show offended you, the text or voicemail number is 209-565-DAVE. For more information about the show, log on to thedavebowmanshow.com.
Hey, I'm going to go do something productive. I'm going to go watch television.